Welcome back to another episode of the Red Reporter Podcast. We have taken a nice little casual vacation break since the end of the season. Here we are, November 13th, the evening of, and we're jumping back into things because the hot stove is kind of starting to get fired back up again. 'Tis the season, both in the baseball world and for my two guests tonight, both of whom are back in frigid Ohio, where apparently it has snowed. So, it is the season to start looking forward to the next year and what the hell the Reds are going to do to get themselves better for next year so we don't have to suffer through another season of trying to explain 90 freaking losses. I'm Wick. I'm your host for this episode yet again. Joining me tonight over in Columbus, Ohio, we have the inimitable Charlie Scrabbles. Mr. Scrabbles, how are you, buddy?
Thank you for having me, Wick.
Well, you're welcome for being hacked.
Podcast listeners here. All right, moving on.
Also joining us is former fearless leader BK down in Cincinnati. Brandon, what's going on, buddy?
Not much, gentlemen. How's it going?
It's going pretty well so far. We are what, about a week and a half, 2 weeks removed from the end of the World Series, and we've already seen the Reds publicly connected to the likes of Yasmani Grandal, Didi Gregorius, Howie Kendrick, Marcell Ozuna. The Reds actually look like they have money and are talking to people, which is the weirdest damn free agent development I can remember. There was that meme getting kicked around on Twitter the last couple of days about there are only, less than 2 months left in the decade. What have you accomplished? And I feel like I was staring at that right next to staring at Reds trade rumors. And I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, so this entire decade, the Reds have not only not done basically anything, they've won no postseason series and have not been back to the postseason since that one awful game in 2013. But one thing they definitively have not done at all is dive into the free agent market and or spend money really at all aside from extending some of their own guys. And it looks like this winter is going to be definitively different in that regard, or at least they're certainly doing a pretty good lip service in that regard. So I guess just what are your thoughts initially on seeing the early leads, I guess, on what the Reds are interested in, and we'll get into specifics on that later. But just the fact that they're connected to this many of the top free agents at this point in the of the winter. BK, what do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think they're just going to go get all those guys, right?
And then some.
Grandal, you're going to have Ozuna, you're going to have Gregorius, everything's going to be great. But no, I think that it's encouraging to see them kind of mentioned with these other teams. Obviously, they're not going to get – they might, make a move for one or two of these guys. I think that it's – I don't think they're really in for Ozuna. I think that's probably – not a move that they're gonna make, but it's definitely encouraging to see them mentioned. Obviously they haven't really been in this position ever, or at least in the last whenever they signed Francisco Cordero, which is still I think their largest free agent contract deal, right?
Was that still back in Red Zone era? Was that Red Reporter yet?
Might have been in the very, very early days of Red Reporter. Definitely before my time.
Before me, yeah.
Aside from that, it's what? It's like 2 years and $16 million to Ryan Ludwig. And then the
position player,
and then the international signings of Chapman and Iglesias, and even at that point, the Reds were a freaking mystery team.
They kind of came out of nowhere, so they weren't really mentioned as the team. So it's definitely encouraging. I don't really know what to think about it because we've never really been in this position.
They haven't overpaid for anybody, so we can't criticize them for having interest yet. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how they are capable of getting in a bidding war.
they haven't missed out on all of these guys yet either. So
yeah.
We're still at limbo.
It is all so much fun though. Like you were saying, they've never been on any free agents of any regard ever. And to see there's five names already. It's not even the middle of November. I guess we're at the middle of November, but it's the middle of November, and there's five names that they're attached to. This is incredible. I'm so titillated by it.
I know. The Reds haven't even lost out to somebody else because they got outbid in free agency. They've just been in. Yeah.
They've not been bid.
It's the weirdest damn thing. There's no denying that. It's gonna be interesting to see if they actually do put their money where their mouth is, because if you look at just the basic numbers of where things sit right now and where they could go, the Reds have roughly, if the arbitration estimates are to be believed and the guaranteed money on the payroll after bonuses and yada yada yada, they're at about $113 million right now. They spent $126 million last year, and they've, by all accounts, suggested that they're going to go well beyond that. You get into non-tenders, guys like Kevin Gausman, Derek Dietrich, Jose Peraza, blah, blah, blah. You shed two or three of those guys, you can get down into that almost $100 million payroll level before you even jump into all the additions you're wanting to make this winter. They could have $40 million in payroll for the 2020 season to be able to add in. And when you start talking about guys like Grandal, guys like Gregorius, I think are the two guys who probably stand to – of the people they've been linked to so far, get the highest guaranteed amount of money. The fact of the matter is, A, they should be able to afford both of them if those are the two guys they pinpoint that they want to go get and spend the money to get them. And B, even if they do that, that $140 million payroll is going to still be basically right at or slightly below league average, which should end up being somewhere around $140, $145 million for next year too. So it's one of those things where the Reds talk about their willingness to spend. They got a long way to go. They got a lot of money to spend just to be an average spending team. And that's one of those things that's, you got to keep it in context with where they are, or where they have been, and where they sit relative to the rest of the baseball world. But aside from that, as another thing I was looking towards that I was kind of trying to figure out when planning on who they could and maybe would sign. They don't have a lot of money that's going to start picking up after this year either. You look at guys like Trevor Bauer, you look at Anthony DeSclafani. Those guys are in the final year under team control, and that's, $24, $25 million that's going to be coming off the books. But then you look at some of the contracts they've signed, guys like Joey Votto, guys like Tucker Barnhart, Eugenio Suarez, Raisel Iglesias. Those are almost kind of fixed-level salaries, so there aren't any big surprises on the guaranteed deals that are going to pop up after this year either. So if the Reds are committed to actually spending some money, not just for the 2020 season, you can get two big free agent guys like that and then still have a pretty manageable payroll in that same range for next year. So they're automatically locking in either being at $160 million in 2021 or having to shed a bunch of guys. I think that's kind of one of those sustainable things. And so that's going to be interesting to see how that pans out in this process. More specifically, though, of those guys, of the four names that we've heard mentioned, which one jumps off the page to you as the guy who seems like the best fit and or the guy that looks like he might be the most realistic target for these Reds? Scrabs, how about you go first?
What do we got? We got Grandal and Gregorius and Ozuna and who am I missing?
Howie Kendrick, I guess. Okay.
I'd like to think that Didi is probably the best going forward. With Grandal, he's 31 and he's catching. I love the guy. I mean, clearly he's a good ball player, but I don't know if I want to lock in 4 years of a catcher at that age. Didi seems like, he's what, a year younger than that? I think he's 30 coming in now. And he's clearly a high level athlete, I think, he's a really athletic dude. It seems like he might age pretty well. I think I would probably lean towards Didi. Ozuna, I'm not having any of that at all. But the one I'm looking most at is Didi, I think.
PK, what do you think?
Yep, I totally agree. I think that you know, when you look at what the Reds need and kind of where their holes are, and honestly, overall, I feel like with the guys that they've been mentioned with, it's encouraging more than anything to see that they're being mentioned with the right kind of guys, right? The guys mm-hmm. that when you look at the free agent market and you look at this Reds roster current as it stands, you know, they really could use a catcher. They could use a guy like Grandal, big bat in the lineup. They could use a shortstop like Didi. And I think, you know, for where the Reds are, it seems like Didi is probably the best fit. They don't really have – they don't have another option in the system, and they don't really have one coming over the next couple of years either to where, you know, you – can look at that position and say, oh, we just need a stopgap here for, you know, the next year or two. Even, you know, with catcher, I know we talked about it on the last pod, but, you know, with Tyler Stevenson, you know, on his way over the next couple of years, you know, maybe I think that would preclude getting someone like Grandal for, you know, a 5 or 6 year deal. But, you know, a guy like Didi, there's not really a shortstop anywhere close. You know, you really have Jose Peraza is the only other guy that is around the big league roster. And, you know, he hasn't really done anything the last couple of seasons. So to at least to show you that he's going to be that heir apparent for the future. So you really are looking on the trade market and, you know, how many teams are going to part with a young shortstop at this point. So you know, Didi, I think, is a great fit for that. You know, obviously he came up through the Red system, and so a lot of familiarity there. He has reportedly said that he loved playing with the Red system, which can be nothing but good. So, to me, I think he has to be the top.
Yeah, I think maybe.
Yeah,
I was going to mention Jose Israel Garcia as a shortstop. He's what he was in Double A this year, yeah. I think. Which, you know, if you're going to like keep a space open for a shortstop of the future, he's hopefully going to be a better looking shortstop of the future than a guy like Jose Israel Garcia. I mean, he's fine. Like he's a decent enough prospect, but you'd be crazy to pin a franchise.
He's not like a Carlos. Yeah. He's not like a Dansby Swanson or, you know, big time. Prospect.
And let's be honest, the way I always look at shortstop prospects, I looked at them as future shortstops or second basemen. And you look up at where the Reds shortstop situation is, and you look if there's any stalwart at second base, there's not. You know, second base is just as wide open right now as shortstop is too. So even if Garcia, who he was at a high A Daytona for most of this year and hit very, very well in the fall league and is one of those guys they spent a lot of money to get, even if he breaks out next year, okay, he could play second base too. You know, you make that work. For me, I look at it kind of as parallel views, but looking at two different players. I think Didi's the guy who they need the most because there isn't someone else there. Yasmani Grandal is the best player out there they could sign. And, you know, when you start figuring in, like, what are the odds of getting somebody and how high you would go and how much you would spend for one another, I think Didi almost is that guy they have to walk away with because, as we mentioned, you know, Jose Iglesias, for what he brought this year, and it was a fine stopgap, whatever, he's also over 30 and not a guy who looks like he has nearly the upside of Didi. I think Didi Gregorius is the one person you really have to identify and say, we're getting him. We would like to get him on X number of years and X number of million dollars, but if it takes more than that to get him, we get him because we got to have him. With Grandal, I could see them getting outbid by somebody who really wanted to throw the moon at him, much like they did with JT Realmuto last year in the trade market. It was clear the Reds thought and sought an upgrade at the catching position behind the plate and went out for one of the two absolute elite catchers in the market. They just got outbid. They didn't have a Sixto Sanchez they were willing to give up, and Philadelphia got him because of it. I could see the same thing happening with Grandal too. You know, we talked about it. He'll be 31 next year. He's one of those guys who obviously he's a switch hitter and could hit from the right side, can cover at first base a little bit, you know, pushed, 600 plate appearances this year as a result of that. But when you've got a guy like Joey Votto and the DH and the NL is still up in the air, that's a lot of question marks to where you got to find the right scenario to make him the right sign. The one thing about it is, though, and that's what I was going to get at also before we talked about Marcell Ozuna, If you sign Grandal, suddenly you've got Tyler Stevenson as a trade chip. And if you've got a guy like that as a trade chip, because he's not going to be your catcher of the future because you signed a catcher for 4 years and you've still got Tucker around and Casale around, suddenly he becomes a very good trade chip. And you can use him to go out and address other things elsewhere. So, having him around, I think, is a good thing to have. But I also don't think it precludes wanting to sign Grandal for what he is and what he could be. And that brings me back to Ozuna. You know, I don't think Ozuna is the guy that they have to have at the top of their list. But on a reasonable deal, if his market falls to where the Reds think he's signable, I'm still amenable to that. I mean, you look up at, the idea of having a perfectly healthy and emerging Jesse Winker, Nick Senzel, and Aristides Aquino in the outfield. Yeah, that'd be great. That's best case scenario, and that would be totally, totally awesome. But look at where the Reds started with their outfield at the start of last year. You know, at the start of last year, you had Winker, you had Senzel, you had Scott Schebler, you had Matt Kemp, you had Yasiel Puig. Schebler was there. Aquino was an afterthought. Phil Orvin was around. All of those guys were there, and yet still here we are at this time this year, and we're saying, wow, maybe an outfield, the outfield's perfect. We don't need any extra help. Maybe they do. You know, maybe they really do need like another big bat for the outfield because you can find a way to make that work. Ozuna, on the other hand, just seems like a guy that, you know, if you brought him in, it would have to be on a shorter-term deal than I think what he wants, meaning 2, maybe 3 years. And I just don't know if that's one of those things that is going to – I don't know how badly this market is going to impact him, put it that way, because we've seen guys in previous winters, you know, like Mike Moustakas. I feel like Ozuna and Moustakas are two guys that are kind of similar in that regard, guys who are like the second option for a lot of teams. And nobody was willing to spend on him once they got past the first option. He falls in the lap the way that Moustakas has for teams the last 2 years. Okay, well, you were one of the teams that had interest in him early.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that totally makes sense. You know, if there's if he can be had at a surprisingly reasonable deal, then, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, I'm gonna look at something like that. But to pursue him as like a top of the line, like you were saying, like top of your free agent list, and pursue him from the very beginning as, you know, we're willing to spend, you know, X and X of money for you. He's so underwhelming in so many regards that I'm looking at two or three other guys before I even have a conversation about Ozuna.
I mean, I would think that, you know, especially for a team like the Reds, a guy like Ozuna is, you know, more of a depth play, and it's kind of like a nice to have player where, hey, if you could get this another big bat in the lineup to just to have, you know, hey, you're going to be a better team. Yeah.
Just one objection.
He would definitely interrupt like that. The Reds offense for sure. When you look at a guy like Didi, like they need somebody.
Right.
Who can play there who isn't Jose Iglesias, right?
Yeah.
Like, they need to address that first. And then, you know, hey, if you have money left over and you have Ozuna still on the market and still need the team,
I think that's the biggest aspect about all this is when you're talking about a team finally being willing to jump into the free agent market, that's potentially $20 million for next year that – they don't know if they're going to be able to spend it or not. You know, you sign DD for 3 years and $42 million or whatever. And that's, you know, $14 million a year. And you chalk that up. We talked about if they're at $100 million after they non-tender Kevin Gausman and they want to get to 140, you swing big at Yasmani and maybe he doesn't sign, but you have to block off enough money to be able to sign him. And maybe that's $16 million for next year. Maybe it's $18. Maybe who knows exactly what they're willing to spend on it. But if you miss out on him, then what? You know, it's not like it.
I don't remember. Were they related to any of the Grandal rumors
last year when it was free agent?
I don't remember.
Not very public, but yes, after the fact, they definitely revealed that there had been some contact with him. To what extent, I have no idea. And obviously, Milwaukee got him for 1 year at $18 million. So whatever it was they were offering wasn't enough for him to say yes. But he turned out reportedly 4 years and $60 million from the Mets. Odds are that's kind of the deal he's probably going to be wanting to get at this point this year. you know, if you're the Reds and you block off that kind of money, knowing that you need him and you need offense and you don't get him, I don't think the Reds are in a position to head into 2020 and be like, well, we didn't get the guy that we want, so we're just going to save that money. I think they know they've got to put it somewhere else. And I think Ozuna would be a plan C if they don't get a guy like Grandal, you know? So at least when I see those rumors, I'm hoping it's just them touching base and just kind of staying in contact more than anything else, because I don't think there's any reason in any world that he should be the primary target, unless, as I mentioned in the piece about the rumor yesterday or whatever the hell it was, that the Reds are still going to consider themselves to be active in the trade market too. And if they are going to be active in the trade market, the way that they've thinned their minor league ranks over the last year with trades – they've got some young outfielders that could be very attractive to certain teams if the right players became available. You know, Winker and Senzel and Aquino obviously have their flaws. They also obviously also have their extreme upside scenarios. But they're three guys who are pre-arbitration guys with a lot of team control and are cheap. And when you start talking about some of the biggest potential trade chips out on the market this winter and how those would fit with the Reds, you got to think a lot of the teams that the Reds would be calling about trade guys would be very interested in their outfielders too. You know, if the Reds are going to get in on a guy like Francisco Lindor or a guy like Trevor Story, just kicking names out there, a guy like Whit Merrifield, if he's a guy that the Reds consider to be a top trade target, where they might be needing to trade from is from their outfield depth. And if that happens, you trade Jesse Winker for one of those guys, and suddenly Marcelo Ozuna looks a lot better and a lot more of a need in a corner outfield spot than he does at this point too. So for me, I look at these rumors as one big rumor as opposed to individual rumors. And if that's the case, it seems like the Reds are certainly being pretty diligent about getting their feet wet in all of the possible pools and seeing how things shake out. And I think that's the pretty prudent way to do this. Yeah.
Good metaphor.
Yeah, feet in pools. It's freezing cold and middle of winter out here. I guess the other big news of late is that none of the Reds rookies finished anywhere in the top of the National League Rookie of the Year voting, which was a bummer and predictable based on how the season finished for a lot of them. But Cy Young voting came out tonight, and considering the Reds had one of the best pitching staffs, or at least starting pitching groups, in recent Reds history, if not entire Reds history, we were watching that a little bit closely to see how things shook out. And unfortunately, Luis Castillo's second half slump prevented him from finishing with any votes this year, despite an overall great season. But Sonny Gray, one of the big guys they acquired last year in their big moves, and a guy they extended for a lot of money, finished seventh. He got a lot of fourth and fifth place votes, I think. Well voted on by the Cincinnati section of the Baseball Writers Association of America. And as a result, he picked up a $500,000 bonus for each of the 4 years remaining on his contract for his seventh place finish this year, which means he basically got voted a $2 million total guarantee bonus, which is good for him. So that was cool. I guess just what are your thoughts on you know, we keep talking about the Reds free agents that they've been connected with, but that's a pretty good segue back into their starting pitching, which is the strength of the team at this juncture. And Sonny was the best of the best. So maybe just wax poetic on Sonny's season and maybe how that could get a little bit better given who else the Reds have brought in to help their entire pitching situation at the big league and minor league level. Heading into next year. Scrabs, what do you think, man?
Man, how much of a fucking grand slam was that trade, man? I mean, getting Sonny for Shed Long and a pick? Like, man, every now and again, you just got to take a step back and remember, like, damn, this Reds front office really killed that one. Like, they get a big thumbs up.
They got a minor league pitcher, too, didn't they? Who else was in that deal? Oh, God, I'm drawing a blank.
What's the kid's name? San Martin, wasn't
it? Yes, San Martin. Yeah, that's right.
That could not have worked out any better. I mean, Sonny, he they fix him. You know, apparently Derek Johnson really knows this guy, and the whole you know, bringing the coach back together with the player, and you know, la la la, like that whole storyline, like coming into spring was a little, I don't know, it's a little best shape of my life kind of sounding. You know what I mean? But goddamn, it worked out. Nah, it worked out. Like, I was kind of rolling my eyes about it, but man, no, it was all on. So yeah, I'll eat my hat on that one. Yeah, it was great.
And the extension so far, I mean, even if he continues to get all the bonuses because of it, that means the extension looks that much better, even though it costs more because he's done well enough to earn all those bonuses as well. So yeah, I'm extremely interested to see how Kyle Bodie coming in and Caleb Cottom getting an advanced role as well, and all that stuff just continues to parlay with the way this entire pitching section of the franchise continues to grow. I think that's one of the bigger developments of not just what the Reds have in house and how that's going to continue to hopefully develop significantly better than it has for the last, I don't know, the entire history of the franchise, but also what it could do in free agent negotiations and free agent discussions as well. And, you know, you wonder, you look up at Tucker Barnhart year over year from 2018 to 2019 with the new staff and the new coaches and everything else, and how his pitch framing went from being one of the worst in all of baseball to one of the best in all of baseball. Then you look up at who the Reds targeted in Real Muto last winter, and Grandal, in theory, this winter, two of the other guys who have consistently rated as some of the best pitch framers in baseball. And you wonder if that's part of the scheme. You know, it's more than just the offense. And obviously, they've talked extensively about one of the offensive upgrades. But you see them targeting the catchers that work the best with pitchers. And you're like, okay, maybe this is a larger theme here.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely – I think when Dick Williams took over, it seems like they really did kind of say, okay, we have to be, you know, more contemporary with our baseball other front offices here. Like, we can't continue it like this. We have to come up with we got to keep up with the Joneses, right? So they've definitely put into all of the trendy new analytic level, you know, high level stuff that other organizations, you know, Houston's been doing this for years now, you know, and it's like they're finally catching up with that. And it's showing, like, you know, the results are there. Like, it's really heartening.
Yeah. I mean, if that had any, like, impetus in getting Sonny Gray, you know, if they were looking at that and said, hey, like, here's this one mechanic thing we can fix with him, and he can be, you know, the pitcher that he was before he went to New York. I mean, all credit in the world goes to, you know, the scouting staff, the coaching staff for fixing him, and the front office for having the balls to make that deal.
Yeah. You know, for me, the funniest part about it is that now every time I see the Reds have interest in so-and-so player, beforehand, you knew what stats to look to see why the front office was enamored with such and such player. Now it's you're looking for different things, you know, knowing that Bodie signed on, knowing that Derek Johnson's there, you see they have interest in a guy like Kevin Gausman, and you're like, well, for the first time in 15 years, I don't have to go check his ERA. I don't have to go check his home road splits.
You look and see if he went to Vanderbilt, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, for one, yes. But also, you're like, oh, crap, what's his spin rate? Did somebody tweak with his pitch mix? Like, has he had fluctuations in velocity? Like, you start to look at all the other things that suddenly you know that's why they wanted him, not because of any of the other basic stats that you could kind of look up and say, oh, they wanted this guy because he hit 32 home runs last year. Like, no, it's –
yeah, right.
It's deeper than that. And there are some that are a little bit more of a question mark and some that don't make as much sense. But then you look up and realize, okay, it's a new reason why they wanted him. What is it? Try to find whatever nugget it is buried in their stats that says, oh, that's the one. That's the variable that we had been underestimating for the last 10 years. And that's the one that they've pinpointed on. And I think that's just going to get increased to be increasingly more fun to follow as this entire pitching coordination system kind of gets implemented.
That's what's so exciting, right? Like, they pick up a guy like Kevin Gausman, and you're like, you know, 5 years ago, I would have looked at him like, yeah, this guy gives up tons of home runs. Like, he's been terrible since, you know, the whole season. Like, why are they paying that money? This is crap. But now, like, they get somebody like that. And I can't presume that, they don't know what they're doing, I guess, right? Like, yeah. I guess, I don't know how to put that better. Like, there's something that they're seeing that I am not able to see. Like, they're doing higher level things than what, like, the publicly available, you know, cutting edge stuff that we can all read is there. So you get a guy that looks like he's crap. Well, I don't know. Maybe they see something I don't. Right. And that's so exciting, right?
And it's such an indictment on the previous regime.
Oh, yeah.
Basically. Yeah, right? Like,
how many things did Red Reporter write about when it came to they just signed Jason Marquis? Oh, he's going to suck.
Yeah, right?
It's
incredible.
Like, and the thing about it is the things that just we try to look for, we try to find like that one golden ticket stat so many times. But then you look up at a guy like Charlie Morton, who was the definition of an average pitcher when he was with the Pirates. He gets to Houston and turns into this otherworldly dynamo, signs a 2-year, $30 million contract with the Rays. And it comes out after the fact, Charlie, what are you doing different? What did you change? What were they tweaking? He literally just said, I wish you could find the quote right in front of me, but he literally just said, I just started throwing harder. I didn't realize I needed to throw harder than I've been throwing, and suddenly I was throwing 98. Like, what the fuck? Like, legitimately, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And like with Kevin, you look up at Kevin Gausman, and maybe that's the case with him too. Maybe they brought him in and said, hey, you don't look like you're throwing max effort. We're not saying you need to throw max effort, but work out of the bullpen a little bit. Drop your third and fourth pitches, focus on these two, and just see what happens. And then boom, he's throwing 98.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, oh, okay, all right. How many other guys out there are there that might fit that mold too? And we talked about DFAing or non-tendering Kevin Gausman. He's a big question mark in all this as well because, you know, he's had plenty of years in his past with the Orioles and last year, meaning 2018, not 2019 with the Braves, where he's pitched very well as a starting pitcher. Reds didn't use him as such, brought him over to be a bullpen guy, but is set to make $10 million bucks next year. We all kind of concede that's a lot to spend on a guy that might be the sixth best starter and has no experience as a reliever. He's a guy I'm interested to find out about too. Like, there's a part of me that thinks that they're working with him in some secret laboratory in Goodyear, showing him his spin rates and trying to focus on whittling down to two pitches and changing a grip. And he might come out throwing 103 and be the best bargain in the market next year because we've got mad scientists running the team's pitching staff now, and that's so strange to think about.
How pissed off would Red Reporter have been 5 years ago if they had spent $10 million on Kevin Gausman? Like, it would be like, well, this is the stupidest thing, right? But now, like, this year, I'm like, well, you know, I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, maybe. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I mean,
it's exciting. Like, it's incredible, right? But as an aside, of course, the top three vote getters in Cy Young voting this year were Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander, and Charlie Morton, who were all on the Astros just last year, right? Oh. Like, the Astros, I don't know what the hell they're doing, but it's insane, right?
Well, technically, we do know sort of what they're doing.
I set them up, you knock them down, buddy.
and at least offensively, because the biggest news in the baseball world, aside from the Cincinnati Reds having money and talking to everyone, is the Astros basically getting – I don't even want to say thrown under the bus by Mike Fiers, because Mike Fiers has been a journeyman throwing 88 miles an hour everywhere he's been. Threw a freaking no-hitter against the Reds for Oakland this year, whatever. Somebody asked him a question, he answered it. But basically saying, the Astros have been not just stealing signs. They've made a very aggressive, very technologically advanced concerted effort to do so and have since – at least the 2017 season when they won a World Series championship. So I guess what are your thoughts on that as it relates to not just what the Astros have done and how all of their strikeout rates somehow evaporated offensively after they reportedly started doing all of this, but also just cheating in baseball and whether or not you think the Astros are the only team doing any of this and what the ramifications should be from the fact that this has come out. BK, how about you start, man?
Yeah, I mean, I would say they're definitely 1,000% not the only team doing that.
Yeah.
As far as – or at the very least, trying to do it. You know, the saying is, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying, right?
Yeah. So,
I think that every team is kind of has their own version of this, whether it's as sophisticated as what the Astros had put together or not. But, you know, I think that, you know, maybe it may have helped them in a couple of situations, but when you look at the improvements that, especially on the pitching side that they made, like, obviously, like, you can't – that isn't going to explain all of their pitchers just being amazing, right? Like, that doesn't explain Charlie Morton finding a fastball.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. So there's right. definitely more to play to their success than that. I think a lot of people today have been trying to be like, oh, well, you know, oh, they cheated, so, you know, it's not as – much of an accomplishment.
My addendum to that though is that if they're cheating this advanced in this way, how many other ways are they cheating that we haven't caught them at also? You know, that's the other part of it. It's like, yeah. All right, well, if they're basically stealing signs and using videotape to do it, using audio signals from the dugout, blah, 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 blah. What else are they doing? Like, what else are they doing that they haven't gotten caught with yet? But yeah, to your point, I think it's crazy to think that every team out there isn't doing at least something trying to get that extra advantage. This seems like it's a little bit on the extreme side, but again, I would be shocked if there's a team out there that was like, wait, teams have been stealing signs and stealing pitches. What? Ah, like, no, that's not
the case. Oh, you mean the Cardinals and the Pirates both haven't came out to say that exact same thing? Oh, yeah. Wow. They don't play the baseball the right way.
Yeah, I mean, like even the Dodgers were savvy enough in the 2017 World Series to reportedly have Chase Utley try to find out if Yu Darvish was tipping pitches. And he was like, no, he's not. But they knew to look for that because they knew something was up. Like, if you know something's up, you know that that's what things are going on. You know teams are constantly trying to steal signs. There's a reason why for 100 years, if there's a runner on second base, you go through a different sequence of signs coming from the catcher, all that stuff. So it's not a foreign substance to the game of baseball. The question just is, is this an isolated instance of the one thing they were doing to get ahead of the pack? Or is this just the tip of the iceberg, not just for them, but for everybody else out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm with Beaker on this. Like, everybody's doing this, right? Like, it's pretty clear. The depth of it, though, that's the really fascinating part. Like, I don't know if I would assume there would even be a bad thing either if they were, you know, much more sophisticated in these attempts. Like you said, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Like, if I know that other teams are trying to catch my signs, I need to get better signs, right? Like, that's the way the game goes, right? Like, I just need to get better at that, which yeah. It sucks because there are rules against this kind of stuff. But again, like, these things, everybody is doing it. And unless you're going to actually crack down on this stuff, which I don't think baseball wants to do because it's so ubiquitous and it's so integral to the game in a lot of respects. But it's I don't really know where they go with it here.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what you would even enforce if you were trying to enforce something. Like, that would involve the league figuring out what was going on, which they didn't this past time, right?
So, right.
I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe the league puts another punishment in for, but even then, people are still going to do it as long as they're going to win, right?
Yeah, and like much like regulating the shift on defense, like. Every team knows which three pitches every opposing pitcher throws. You know, a guy comes in the bullpen, you've scouted him, you know exactly if he throws a four-seamer or two-seamer, you know if he throws a split finger or if a curveball or a slider, you know if he's a knuckleball. You know all of that beforehand. So you know preemptively, you've already whittled it down to one of three pitches and one of three options as is. That's totally allowed. You're allowed to videotape and scout and look at all these guys. Yeah. In football, Peyton Manning, we get to the line of scrimmage and be like, I recognize this. He's going to blitz. I'm changing my play, like all of that. Like, it's part of it. It's 100% part of it because it's the ebb and the flow. But you got to think some of like the in-game stuff is what needs to have at least a little bit of a tweak because, you know, sticking a guy with a camera in the outfield and having a microphone going to the dugout, and the dugout banging on walls to give the batter a heads up, like that seems to be a little bit more than I think what the even the spirit of the unwritten rule would suggest, which is, you know, okay, if you think this guy's tipping pitches and you have a way of letting your guys know, do so. But you can't bring in third-party non-players with binoculars and cameras and everything else. That, to me, seems like that's going a bit over the line. For the same reason with shifting, as I brought that up, just to circle back on that, like I don't think Rob Manfred can regulate like this defender has to stand on this side of second base so he can't get the ground ball 5 feet that way until the ball is hit. Like that, right. That's like if you want to stand on the other side of second base, do so. Much like if you want to be able to make sure that this guy doesn't know you're throwing this pitch, do better about hiding it. All of that stuff, as long as it's kept within the players and the parameters of you get one glove on one hand and one bat in batter's box and you throw a ball, you know. So
yeah, I think that really where all this is headed is instead of robot umps, robot pitch callers, and let's go from there.
Just like to completely randomized. Yeah, you pull the lever on the slot.
Yeah, you push,
and it rolls up. Push slider, bat left,
circle, and up on the controller, and then that tells you what pitch.
No, this is what happens. So, so to protect pitchers on the mound, they get to wear football helmets that have microphones in them, and then the managers get to wear visors and headsets, just like in football as well. And then they get to talk to the pitcher from the dugout themselves and tell them exactly what pitches to throw.
More
football. That's what we need. Well, good stuff, guys. Well, felt good to get back on the pod and train since we've been off for a couple of weeks, kind of letting the 2019 season wind down as we ramp up for what the hell the 2020 season is going to be. But I feel like we've had enough intriguing rumors / potential news about what the Reds are up to this winter to where it was time to jump back in this particular week. So hopefully with the winter, I guess the GM meetings are just now wrapping up today, maybe tomorrow. But we got winter meetings coming up. We got qualifying offer rejections coming up. We got the non-tender deadline, all that jazz. So hopefully over the next few weeks, we will have plenty of juicy Cincinnati Reds information to jump back into and cover on regular episodes of the Red Reporter podcast again. So I guess with that in mind, maybe we wrap this one up and see what the Reds have in store over the next couple days, weeks or so, and jump back into it when they start making some more waves. So cool. So BK, Charlie Scrabbles, thank you so much for joining us. For all our listeners out there, you can find us at redreporter.com where we have fresh, juicy nuggets of Reds information periodically, hopefully more often than not. You can find us on Facebook at Red Reporter Fans. Follow us on Twitter at Red Reporter also. And just type in Red Reporter. We're the only Red Reporter out there. You can find us. So, good stuff. It's good stuff, guys. For BK, for Scrabs, I'm Wick. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you guys down the road.